League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This isn't about, you know, trying to split hairs to try and figure out, well, is he really worth the $27 million average and $92 million guaranteed? That shifts into a market dynamic type of discussion. But Matthew, without a doubt, the best way I can put it is this. If you put him on the street and let him be a free agent, there will be people falling all over themselves trying to sign him, and they pay him a lot more than what he just got paid. Look, I understand that with great power, great pay comes a lot of responsibility, a lot of scrutiny. But we have fallen into this trap of being so lazy with attaching win-loss records to quarterbacks and using it to justify taking shots at contracts like this for a guy who, admittedly, his football team has not been very good against winning teams and has not been very good in the postseason when they've happened to get there. But football is the ultimate team game. If you put Matthew Stafford on the street and he had made it to become a free agent, then they should fire everybody up in Detroit. You can't let a guy like this go. We know where the market's going for quarterbacks. It's going to go even higher.
I'm not questioning the talent of Matthew Stafford. Like Riddick said, on open market, he'd have got the money. I don't have a problem with it from that perspective. I have a problem with the fact that the man has been a quarterback in the National Football League for 8 years. He's made the playoffs three times. He's only had a winning record and a winning season three times. And this organization has not won a playoff game since 1991. There is just something about me that has a problem with individuals that end up cashing in when the team never seems to. It's not his fault, and I get that. But when you are the $27 million man, damn, could you win a playoff game? When you're making that kind of money, figure it out.
Listen, the highest guarantee that we have ever seen in NFL history was Andrew Luck getting $87 million in guaranteed money. Matthew Stafford's guarantee is north of there. When you're talking about a $135 million contract and you're talking about north of $90 million in guaranteed money, you're talking about a big-time deal here that sets the record and will become the new benchmark for other quarterbacks to shoot for when they're doing new deals.
The sixth, Jose Ramirez accounting for the Tribe's only hit, only run, and he just did it again! Into the second deck, Jose Ramirez ties the game at two.
Told you we got our rally man here.
Santana, oh, he clobbers one in deep right field. Hicks is going to watch this one go to the cheap seats. And the Indians take a 3-2 lead.
Corey Kluber to toe the rubber.
And the 1-2 is strike three called. And Kluber paints the outside corner. Out looking, seven strikeouts for Corey Kluber.
Like Klubs, he pounded the strike zone. You know, he gave up a couple, but he didn't panic. Thank goodness Jose had the two home runs that kind of get us even. And then, you know, we certainly made the most of, what, five or six hits.
You just don't want to go out like that. I feel like there was still a lot for me to prove. Not necessarily to anybody else, but prove myself. Keep on Hanson, keep on getting better. And then the way we lost just, you know, didn't sit well for, I think, any of us. For us as offense, just attacking the field, trying to create stress for a defense. I think that's something that we focused on in this offseason. I think we've been doing that pretty well in the preseason as well. For me, it just gets me in a rhythm, honestly. Playing fast, just getting completions, having the ball come out on time, I think just gets me in a little rhythm, and then just keeping that consistently throughout the game.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I got to tell you, Cushlin, a good producer would already have Eric Clapton's money playing right now. A good producer would have foregone Van Halen and our traditional right here, right now open and changed the theme a little bit. That's what a good producer would have done. What do you think?
I suppose you raised some quality good points.
Oh, my God. It's money the issue right now. How about the money? For your boy, Mr. Matthew Stafford. Money, dude, you know, anybody need a loan? Anybody in the entire state of Michigan? Anybody in Northwest Ohio? My goodness, $135 million, which, by the way, of course, as we all know, Jim, is not the guaranteed amount, but it is north of $90 million. That is what the guaranteed amount is for Matthew Stafford. It is the record, the highest paid player in the history of the National Football League. And until, of course, the next quarterback comes down the line who is considered to be worth top-tier money. And for now, that title is going to belong to Matthew Stafford, which is indeed our big story of the day. Thanks for joining us right here. It's 313. This is ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. And Matthew Stafford is a very, very wealthy guy. Let's be precise, though. He was already a very, very wealthy guy. He's been in the league, what, 8 years? This is ninth year?
This will be his ninth.
And he's already made millions and millions of dollars. Let's not pretend he didn't already make a ton of money. But now, there's something ceremonial about it. Nobody had a problem with him making multi-millions of dollars. One of the better contracts when he signed it in the National Football. Nobody had a problem with that. But now that it's called the richest contract in the history of the National Football League, Kush, now that it's, you know, official that he is making more money than Derek Carr, that he's making more money than Aaron Rodgers, that he's making more money than Drew Brees, more money than Matt Ryan, the MVP, more money than Ben Roethlisberger, more money than Philip Rivers, more money than a whole bunch of other guys who are widely regarded as being better than he is, now we've got ourselves a bit of a controversy. Now we got ourselves a little bit of a different kind of quarterback controversy, not about who the starter, but who deserves to be making all that jack. Now, you heard a lot there in the opening montage. Nicely done, Mr. Cushlin, by the by. It's probably why you couldn't find me Eric Clapton, because you because you were giving me Louis Riddick and Stephen A. Smith and Adam Schefter all on the deal before a little bit of baseball stuff, which we will also talk about a little bit later on. But what we really need to talk about here is the real issue and what people are talking about, what people are griping about, and that is the ceremonial part of this, the fact that it is now the richest contract in history. Should they be forking over that kind of dough for a guy who does not have the best record in the world when it comes to playing against winning teams, when it comes to playoff teams and playoff games? Guy who hasn't been able to take this team, the Lions, to big victories when, you know, the opponent is a little bit better. A guy who's been to three playoffs in his 8 years, which is a lot better than, you know, a lot of guys before him, but who hasn't been able to get that W. You might argue he had one, but was victimized by a bad call 2 years ago. Probably was. I remember spending an awful lot of time talking about it on this program. But at the end of the day, your record is what your record is. And his record is winless in the playoffs. His record is extraordinarily weak in the regular season against teams that have winning records. And his record says he's not one of the top-tier quarterbacks in the league. And that's what everybody is talking about right now. There are polls online right now. What do you think of Matthew Stafford becoming the highest-paid player in the NFL, in NFL history? You got choices. Here's one just from ESPN. He deserves it for his role in resuscitating the Lions. Choice B is it was inevitable. He was the next elite QB in line for a new deal. And the last one is it's ridiculous that Stafford should be the top paid player. Here are your responses. 40% say he deserves it for resuscitating the Lions. Very close second is it was inevitable. It was just his turn because he was in the line. And the last place finish was the ridiculous comment. Now, this is why I bring all of that up. You've heard a lot of responses, like I said, a lot of analysis today about his place in line. In fact, let me play this from Mike and Mike this morning. This is Greenberg responding to any Lions fans who say, you know, I like the guy, but I don't like the guy that much. What exactly has he gotten us? Has he put up some numbers? Yeah, but does that benefit us? No. Because it's leading to zero wins in the playoffs. It's leading to zero meaningful wins against playoff teams in the regular season. So is this really who we want to invest all of that money in over the course of the next several years? Here's Greenberg this morning discussing that part of all of this. And I think it's important.
Introducing the Roman...
Doggone it. Apologies. We had a little bit of an ad before. I didn't clip that off before we loaded that up. So anyway, Greenberg, and I'll let him speak for himself here in just a second. But Greenberg essentially says what Riddick said, Jim, and it was a good clip, by the way, at the beginning of the program, and that is if you put this guy out there for other teams who are quarterback-starved, the Jets, the Jags, maybe the Niners, even though Brian Hoyer had a preseason game of a lifetime just a couple of days ago. You look at the quarterback star of teams, they would love to overpay for Matt Stafford, so maybe, just maybe, it's time for the Lions to quit griping about his talent and what he brings to the table.
Here, because he smiles, he's liked. If he had Cutler's face, he would be vilified for this deal. Think about it. I don't think that at all. If you put Matthew Stafford and Jay Cutler next to each other, in my opinion, as players, there's no comparison. No comparison at all. Cutler is a never-ending turnover machine.
Yeah.
Stafford has put up monstrous numbers on bad teams with no running game. I mean, you just gave the number. How many passes did he throw that year? 700-something?
In 2012, since 2011, 663, 727, 634, 602, 592, 594. 727 passes.
Even though the smallest number in that list would be one of the highest numbers in the league, they have been a disproportionate passing team. They're a bad team and a bad organization, a bad franchise. You're blaming it on the quarterback. In my opinion, you were completely missing the forest for the trees.
Yeah, I mean, but I'll still say, I understand him getting the money, but I understand disgruntled and disappointed Detroit Lion fans who are saying, you know what, maybe we could find something better to do with the money, even if it means starting over again.
How do you feel about that? If you're a Lions fan, how do you feel about that kind of a discussion? You know, you're talking about starting over again, and what does starting over again mean if you were really not happy with Stafford getting paid this extraordinary amount of money? What does starting over mean? To me, starting over means not paying a guy like Stafford, letting him become a free agent, letting somebody else overpay that amount of money for him, having then their starting quarterback. He's only 29, so he'll probably be that guy for the next 4 or 5 or 6 years to 33, 4 or 5 years of age. And you would then end up having to go into the draft looking for somebody who might be as good as what? As probably Matthew Stafford was, because that's all you know, and you can't even guarantee yourself that, as we have seen countless numbers of teams doing time after time after time. You know, we're drafting guys. They're drafting guys like Jared Goff. You think the Rams would be happy if Jared Goff, the number one pick last year, turned out to be as good as Matthew Stafford? The answer is hell yes, they would. They're drafting guys like Carson Wentz of the Eagles. Do you think the Eagles would be satisfied if after 8 years he played as well as Matthew Stafford plays the game? Hell yes, they would. How about Paxton Lynch, who can't even beat out Trevor Siemian in Denver? Do you think they would be happy if Paxton Lynch, a high pick, turned out to have a career the likes of which Matthew Stafford has had for at least the first 8 years of his career? Hell yes, they would. What about the Browns, Cushlin? Do you think that DeShone Kizer, you think the Browns and Hugh Jackson would be happy if they can turn DeShone Kizer in the next 8 years into a guy who has put up the numbers and had the success from an individual standpoint? Maybe not wins and losses and meaningful wins and losses, as we talk about when it comes to regular season victories or regular season records against teams with winning records and playoff wins. But do you think the Browns would be happy if their pick, second round pick, DeShone Kizer from Notre Dame and Central Catholic, went on over the first 8 years to throw for 30,000 yards, 187 touchdowns against 108 interceptions, and a quarterback rating of 86.8? I think they'd pretty much freaking take that, don't you?
I pretty much would too. I mean, at this point, and maybe I'm just that extra biased here, but considering all the Browns quarterback issues, at least going back to 99, or as we pointed out of this program, even farther than that, he could have a mint for all I care.
And you could say the same thing, not just about the Browns 1999 issues, but go to some of those other teams that I mentioned that are quarterback starved, that have been begging for. Let me say this. And is this a bridge too far? Do you think that the Houston Texans, if they get Deshaun Watson, top five pick, do you think they would be happy with Deshaun Watson putting up the Matthew Stafford production numbers? And let me just throw some of this at you here, okay? In his last six seasons, 5,038 yards passing, 41 touchdowns, 16 picks. 4,967, 20 touchdowns, 17 picks, a little bit weaker there in terms of the production of the QB TD interception ratio. 4,650 yards, 29-19. 4,200 yards, 22-12. 4,200 yards, 32-13, and then last year 4,300 yards, 24-10. All, by the way, without any semblance of a rushing attack.
Yep.
Do you think that the Houston Texans would be glad they took Deshaun Watson where they did, if indeed he gave those kinds of numbers in Houston?
Oh, of course they would. Of course they would. And here's the thing to
How
remember.
How about the Bears if Mitch Trubisky did the same?
Yeah,
I think they'd be happy with their first overall pick?
The answer would be universal yeses here.
Or number two overall, obviously.
Right, of course. Yes.
Their first overall pick.
Yes. And the answer is still yes. And the interesting thing that I've been hearing on all this today, Bob, is that none of this should be news to any Lions fans with any semblance of knowledge. No matter who it is, Bob, for the last 6 months, whenever we've talked to any Lions person, something about this day has come up in the conversation. Part of the thing I'm hearing from a lot of these national guys, whether it's Stephen A. or that I played the montage or others since this broke yesterday, is how could you give that much money to a guy who has, no playoff wins, acting so surprised and shocked and out of the blue. But if you're a Lions fan, and you have any knowledge of this situation, or if you've listened to this program in the last 6 months, whenever we've had any Lions person on, today was inevitable. We've been basically saying and asking that of every Lions guest again for the last 6 months, that this day was eventually going to come. That's why I'm not as hand-wringing surprised, over this. In fact, I'm kind of glad that it isn't dragging on anymore. We were starting to get to the point where, from that Lions perspective, this better not drag on into the season.
You're right, almost all the way through. You didn't want this to drag into the season. You knew this day was coming. The only question was, when the Lions extended him out, would they give him $30 million a year?
Right.
They didn't. They gave him 27. They came to an agreement with a number that's about $2 million more than the record, which was Derek Carr's, and he set for just a matter of months. They went $2 million plus over per year over Carr, but they did not go to 30. It's going to take the next guy in line to get to the 30.
Kirk Cousins.
Whether that's Kirk Cousins. And you know as well as I do, if the Redskins want to play around like they have and franchised him the last 2 years, once he hits the open market, you know darn well that the Jacksonville Jaguars, given Bortles and Henny, you know that the New York Jets, Hackenberg and Bryce Petty and Josh McCown, they will give him $30 million to come there. You know doggone well that a great number of teams looking at the production, including San Francisco, given the production that Kirk Cousins, the Michigan State product, has put up in the last 2 years, they will pay him even though he is not worth that much money. And Kush, that is why I'm going to slam on the brakes on everything that I was just saying. While everything I just said was accurate, he would make a boatload of money on the open market, more than what the Lions were willing to pay him and did end up paying him. It is not his fault, necessarily, that the Lions franchise is a joke. It is not his fault that the entire organization has been futile for 60 years. It is not his fault that they haven't won a playoff game since when, Jim?
91.
1991. It is not his fault that they don't have a running game. It is not his fault that they have had terrible front office management, Matt Millen years. It's not his fault that this franchise has been one of the laughingstocks. Up there, not quite as bad as the Browns probably since they came back. But truly one of the laughing stocks in the National Football League. It's not his fault. It's a team sport, as Lewis Riddick said.
Yep.
It is the ultimate team sport. You can't put it all on one guy. However, despite all of those things being 100% true, Kush, this is where I have a problem with paying Matthew Stafford this money. The way the descriptors are being used here by those breaking this down and analyzing this, they're saying it was his turn. He's not the best, but he's the next great quarterback whose contract is up, so he has to get more than the last guy. And the next guy will get more than Stafford. And the next guy will get more than the guy who got more than Stafford, right? That's the progression here. My problem is, how the hell is Matthew Stafford in that line? How is he in the line of next elite quarterback to get paid, so therefore he makes more than the last elite quarterback to get paid? If you're not a member of the elite, that's the problem I have. Now, I'm not going to fault the Lions for doing this at all. But let's ask ourselves, when we talk about that pantheon of quarterbacks, when we talk about, you know, where you rank Matthew Stafford among the list of great passers, is he in the tier of Brady, Stafford, Luck, Ryan, Breeze, Roethlisberger? Who am I skipping? Who am I missing out of that right now? I'll stop there. And Derek Carr, I think, has to be included in that in large part, because Derek Carr is so much younger. He has ascended so fast to that tier. He's just ahead of Stafford, and because he's so much younger, it puts him considerably ahead of Stafford, which is why I think Derek Carr deserves the contract that he just got. I don't have a problem with the practice of saying, here are the list of top-tier quarterbacks. Who should make the most among them? The answer, the next one to get his to have his contract up. The next guy is going to be more than the next guy. Rodgers is going to pass Brady. And Brady, of course, isn't really passing anybody, because he's one of the very select few that is willing to take less money when his contract is up, so that the Patriots have some financial cap room and flexibility to make the players and the team around him stronger, because he doesn't measure his worth by dollars and cents anymore. Tom Brady measures his worth by the next ring. But aside from Brady, Ryan is going to make more. And I'm throwing the names out in random order. I don't know what order their contracts are up, but this is for the purposes of explaining the model. If Aaron Rodgers makes A, and Matt Ryan, the defending MVP, his contract is up next, it's going to be A plus X. And then if Roethlisberger's is up after that, it might be A plus X and Y. And then if Rivers is up after that, it might be X and Y and Z. You understand the point. Each guy is going to get a little bit more than the last guy in that top tier, because they're all in that top tier. The Stafford tier isn't that tier. That's the problem I have with this. The Stafford tier, to me, is the Cam Newton tier. MVP 1 year, really, really inconsistent and overrated the next year. It's the probably Russell Wilson tier. It's probably the Eli Manning at this stage tier. It's probably the Marcus Mariota, who is on the rise and going to be in that upper tier, probably within 2 years. It might be that, you know, I got to put Drew Brees still in that top tier, even though he's going to be 39 years old. So is Brady, and he can still do what he does. So he's in that top tier. Excuse me. And I'm just trying to think of the top of my head now, some of the other guys, not the youngsters who are just starting out like Watson, you know, Trubisky, young guys who are untested, not even Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz is probably slightly below the tier we're discussing right now, because he's only going into his second year at this. We all know who the third-tier guys are. You know, pretty much whoever's quarterback in the Niners, Brian Hoyer, whoever's quarterback in the Jets, Hackenberger, Petty, whoever's quarterbacking the Jaguars, even whoever's quarterbacking the Browns. Sorry to say that for now, but for now, DeShone Kizer, you're going to be down in the bottom tier of the NFL quarterbacks. But you understand the point. Joe Flacco's probably in that tier with Matthew Stafford. That's another guy I didn't think of. Oh, Andy Dalton is in that Stafford tier. So the model is okay with me that the next guy up sets the market price, but it's got to be the market price for the middle tier guys, the second tier guys. Dalton, when he's up next, can make a little bit more than Stafford. Flacco can make a little more than Dalton, depending on when he's up. Other guys, Mariota can make a little more. And on down the line we go in that tier, but you can't take a second tier guy like Matthew Stafford and elevate him to the Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, you know, Andrew Luck, Drew Brees tier. You can't do that. Now it just seems out of whack. Now it just seems disproportionate. Now it just seems, you know, flat out stupid. Just because you play the position doesn't mean when your contract is up, you get more than the next guy. Kirk Cousins is in that tier. He doesn't deserve to make more than Stafford. He doesn't deserve to make more than Rodgers or Ryan or any of the other top-tier guys, but he's gonna because, well, he's next. Yeah, but he's not that guy. But he'll make more on the open market, so therefore his team or the open market will have to pay him $30 million a year. So that's how I see it. I don't think the Lions had a choice because everybody in the league is looking for a quarterback that can be consistent in a quarterback-driven league, in a passers league. Everybody is looking for a guy who can throw 5,000 yards a year. Matthew Stafford can do that. Can he win big games? No. Or at least has he won big games? No. But can he put up the big numbers? Can you build other guys around him? Yeah. So therefore, somebody's going to pay him a huge amount of money. And because of that, and because the Lions, if they did not pay him and they watched him walk for that huge amount of money elsewhere, what would they be doing? They'd be trying to stockpile draft picks to try to get up into the top two or three or four of a draft and draft somebody who can probably put up numbers like Matthew Stafford used to. And if that's the case, why not just let Matthew Stafford continue to put up those numbers and hope you get a defense? Hope you get a running game. Ultimately, that's what has to happen here. But from a fan standpoint, a fan of the NFL, not just necessarily a fan of Matthew Stafford or the Lions or anything else, but just as a fan of the National Football League. Yeah, this is what I was looking for, by the way. And by the way, Kush.
Yes?
I'm an idiot. I said Clapton. It's Floyd, for crying out loud.
I thought that sounded weird, but I just wanted to let you run with it.
I feel like such an idiot. For a guy who loves his classic rock, I mean, honestly, for me to say Clapton, you should have played Money from Pink Floyd, but I feel like an idiot. But this is what I was looking for. Let me hear it just one or two times from Matthew Stafford. Yeah, buddy. God, that was awful. There's a reason I'm on the extravaganza and not the voice. Lions fans, time for you to sound off. Did your boy get too much? Anybody have a problem with him being the highest paid player in the history of the National Football League? 866-240-1065. Oh, we can't do that line. That's how you fade it out. Just in time for the wild start of the day.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
So you knew that profanity was coming in that
yes.
Color, couldn't you?
Yes, good call on that one.
Your fingers hanging over the dump button.
I was ready.
But so was I, my man. Buffalo Wild Wings, Wild Stat of the Day. The Royals, who were shut out three straight times by the Indians, were shut out again last night to make it four straight games without scoring a run. In fact, they haven't scored since the second inning way back last Thursday, bringing their scoreless streak to 43 innings. That streak is now just five shy of the all-time record for consecutive innings of futility, which is 48 innings held by the 1968 Chicago Cubs and the 1906 Philadelphia Athletics. You would think somebody might swing real hard and run into one before.
It could happen tonight.
Yeah, that's right. Who do they have tonight? Who do they face?
Tampa, I want to say again.
You know who's pitching, though.
I'm checking now because now you got me curious.
It doesn't matter because you could pitch right now and shut out the Royals. They're just in their own heads. They're in their own heads. Make no mistake about that. But at any rate, you'd think they'd run into one and break that streak. But if they go to the sixth inning without scoring, they will tie. If they go through the sixth, they will break the all-time record of consecutive scoreless innings held by those 68 Cubs and those 1906 Philadelphia Athletics. That is your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. All right, coming up in just a couple. We are going to take some of your phone calls. Lions fans, do you like the deal? Are you okay with him being the highest paid player ever, even if you're not a Lions fan? How do you feel about Matthew Stafford, who's not in the top tier, he's in the second tier, but he has decided he go, and so have the Lions, that he goes to the front of the list ahead of top tier players from a performance standpoint, not from an earnings standpoint. He now is in his own tier, his own class, from the earnings standpoint. How do you feel about it? 866-240-1065. Right back with you on the ticket.
And so right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
I don't know why I'm picturing Matthew Stafford just rolling in a convertible someplace right now around the D, just jamming this. Just cranking. I know that's what I'd be doing. I can tell you that if I signed a deal, the richest deal in the history of what it is that I do for a living. Matthew Stafford guaranteed $90 million. Where's Austin Powers? $90 million. That's what we're talking about here. Guaranteed for Matthew Stafford. Is it too much? Lions fans. 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. Do you think the Lions did the right thing? The only thing? And even if you do agree that they had to do this, how do you feel about a guy who's probably second tier, making more money than all of the guys in the first tier, if that's how this whole thing is going to play out? Josh is in Bowling Green. You are on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Hey, Josh, what's shaking?
Hey, not a whole lot. How you doing, Bob?
I'm good, man. What do you think? Stafford is rich. We knew he was going to be. He already was. He already was, for that matter. But what do you think of the amount?
No, I'm 32 years old. Mm-hmm. I believe that he's way better than the days of Scott Mitchell, Charlie Batch. We finally got a coach, quarterback, GM. And as far as the 0-16 season was concerned, yeah, I don't want to see that again. We don't have a whole lot of pick in the quarterback atmosphere right now.
Very true.
And
although this coming year, by the way, this coming draft, you know, I was talking to a guy yesterday about this with the Browns trying to find out if Deshaun Kizer from Notre Dame is going to be the guy or not, because you find out now, because this next draft is going to be quarterback rich, according to all of the experts. Maybe one of those young guys is the next great big thing. And then again, maybe he's not. Maybe he's a flop the way Jared Goff has been thus far with the Rams, and you wish you would have had Matthew Stafford back.
Well, I'm not a huge Cleveland fan, excuse me, but that's the best way to go. You got to roll the dice. Was it 27? Yes, absolutely. Yeah, 27 quarterbacks, and that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it really is. And there's no doubt they have to figure out if this guy is the guy long term, and they have to do it by giving him as many starts as possible. So they have to find, so they know if they should be a part of this derby, this quarterback derby that's going to be next April in the draft. And I think that's exactly the point. They haven't had the guy that the Lions got. After 0-16, the Lions got a guy like Matthew Stafford, who in a quarterback-driven league is one of the better quarterbacks, if not one of the very elite quarterbacks. They haven't struggled to find that to fill that position the way the Browns have, the way the Bears have, the way the Jets have, the way the probably Niners have, even though they had Kaepernick his best year in 2012 when they went to the Super Bowl under Harbaugh. There are a lot of teams that wish the Jaguars have. All these other teams have struggled to find somebody as good as Matthew Stafford, and I think everybody, even if you're a real big cynic, you would have to agree that Stafford hasn't been the biggest problem with the Lions. The Lions haven't surrounded him with enough talent.
Absolutely not. The running game has been short for a long time. We can only hope for the best with Amir Abdullah.
Yep.
And see where we go from there.
I hope he doesn't get broken again, because he is
absolutely
a very, very valuable piece when healthy. There's no question about it. Hey, Josh, great call, my friend. I appreciate it. Thanks for weighing in on this. Let me go out to Perrysburg next and say good afternoon to Andy right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Andy, what's going on?
No, but I don't get where you say he's not. He's a top 10 quarterback. I don't consider one of the top three twice a year.
Let me explain my position on it, and then you can tell me what you think. When I say top tier, I don't think the top tier extends to 10. I don't think there are 10 guys that I would call quote-unquote elite NFL quarterbacks, and that's the difference. He might be top 10, but I don't think that tier extends that far. If he is top 10, it's like right at 10, and that's why I think he's in the next tier down, the Flacco, you know, Dalton, some of those other names that I threw out there before. That's where I see it. How deep do you see the first quote-unquote elite group, the Brady, you know, Rodgers, you know, kinds of guys who put up the huge numbers, win the big playoff games, have Super Bowl rings, and on down the line? How deep do you think that goes?
10. I think Brady throws every – Brady, and now that Manning's gone, threw everything off for their and when Brady leaves, we're going to realize that we have seen the best quarterbacks in the NFL ever.
Yeah, it very well may be. You very well may be right. Just for giggles, give me your 10. Give me your 10 that you would call elite quarterbacks.
Not Brady.
Not capable Brady. Ones, but elite ones. Guys that you know, that not only put up the numbers, but win playoff games. And also, and this is what's big to me. In fact, before you give me the rest of your list, riddle me this, Andy. One of the things that I think makes Brady so good is that he is able to, kind of like LeBron James in a way, make so many people around him better by his own brilliance. He affects everybody else because of how he plays. He takes average receivers who would stink in other cities and makes them all pro in New England. He takes LeGarrette Blount, who can't do anything anywhere else, but he comes to New England and he's a pro bowler as a running back. He makes people better around him, and that's what I think great quarterbacks do. I don't know that there are a ton of those. Do you think Matthew fits that bill? Has he made anybody around him better to the point where, again, obviously, you know, the big criticism here that people are talking about today is that record against winning teams and the lack of a playoff win, but does Matthew make the people around him better to the point where he would qualify for elite status?
Yes, I believe he does. I mean, Kelvin Johnson left and we made the playoffs. Look, take Philip Rivers, for instance.
Yeah.
Where does he have in the playoffs? And the car guy, I don't think he's elite. I think soon as they figure him out, he's going to end up like Cam Newton. And
which guy? I didn't hear what you said.
I think he said that? Car. You said car, right,
yeah,
Andy?
I didn't hear what guy you said.
Yes,
oh, you
yes.
Didn't hear
I'm
car.
Saying, I'm saying, yes, I'm saying, you know, car got all that money. And I mean, for Christ's sakes, look at Sam Bradford. I mean, come on. And you're not going to put money on Stanford when Bradford gets all that coin?
Well, let's not say that, well, Bradford got paid and he stinks, therefore pay this guy. If I'm looking for my team to get better, I want to pay the guy at the helm the right price, the market price, not what some other stiff got, because I want extra money to be able to buy the next great running back or pay a free agent wide receiver to come in and be a star for this guy. You see what I'm saying? You know, Brady takes less money in his contracts.
And Brady has plenty of money.
Yeah.
Stafford's trying to get his. They're all in the NFL to get theirs.
Yeah, that's true.
And you've got to get what you can get before you get hurt. So you got to get as much guaranteed money up front as you can get.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Bosa, that's the whole biggest thing he was holding out on, was to get as much money as he could.
Who was?
Guaranteed. Joey Bosa. That's why he didn't show up to camp last year. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Which was a little goofy because, you know, I mean, the rookie salary scale is a slotting system anyway. I mean, it really shouldn't have come to that. The rookie thing is kind of set up.
But it did.
Just for the sake of it, go ahead and give me those 10 now that you said that you think are the elite quarterbacks in the league. Go ahead. You said Brady first. Then who else?
Rodgers, Brady.
Yep.
I would say Manning.
Eli Manning?
Wow. Eli Manning's got two Super Bowl rings. He beat Brady twice.
Yes, he did. But we're talking about right now. At least I am. I'm talking about
right now. If Manning was on the market right now, and I was the Cleveland Browns, I would throw every dime I had at him.
How old is he, Kush? How old is he? Eli Manning, to me,
he's dropped off. He's 30. I think he's 35,
yeah,
36,
no
somewhere
way
in there.
I throw that kind of money at a 35-year-old Eli Manning whose best years are clearly behind him. Man, that's okay. It's your list, not mine. All right, so you've got Brady, yep, Rodgers and Eli Manning. Go, what else you got?
Breeze, Rivers. And I have
and Stafford. You said you're including Stafford.
Yeah,
in this.
I got Stafford around 10.
Okay. Well, these are I'm just giving. I'm just looking for 10 elites. So you're up to 6.
And then, 7 would be Cam Newton. He's been in the Super Bowl.
Oh boy.
And then you got Flacco. Got a Super
Bowl
ring.
Oh, stop! You're killing me now. You are just killing me. You're naming a bunch of mediocre quarterbacks who just can't do anything consistently, and you're putting them up there with Brady and Rodgers. You're killing me, Andy, but give me your rest of them. What do I got? Two,
no,
four,
no,
six,
I would
eight.
Put Brady and Peyton Manning were a level above. I don't put Tom Brady in the level with anybody.
Okay, that's fine.
He's the greatest quarterback of all time.
You got two more to make 10 that you think are elite of the elite.
I can't think of them right now.
Okay. Sorry. That's okay. I'm going to guess that maybe you would want to throw Matt Ryan in there because he's the reigning MVP. No?
Well, yeah, Matt Ryan. I always forget about him.
Okay.
Last year, he finally broke through last year, really.
Do you put Russell
in
Wilson
my opinion.
Out there by chance?
No, I don't put Russell Wilson anywhere
Super
in that
Bowl champion,
picture.
Super Bowl champion. You said that about Manning. You said that Newton got one.
Yeah, but no.
What about Roethlisberger? You didn't include Roethlisberger.
Roethlisberger, yes, but okay. I hate Pittsburgh.
Now you got 10. Now you got 10.
Yep.
Andy, thank you for the call, my friend. I'm going to get some other people on the radio.
Thank you for
it.
Taking my call.
You got it. Andy and I, and this is what makes sports radio great, by the way. Andy's not wrong, and I'm not wrong. But he and I have very different opinions about what an elite quarterback is. Aaron Rodgers fits that bill. Tom Brady fits that bill. Drew Brees fits that bill. Eli Manning no longer fits that bill. Not now. Not at the production level he's at and at the age he is. Cam Newton, 2 years ago, was the MVP, is no longer an elite-level quarterback after the steps he took back last year, and I mean major, giant steps backwards. He's got to prove it all over again before I'd put him in my top 10. Sorry, Cam. Joe Flacco. I don't know if he was ever in my top 10. He has had some very fortunate things happen to him with certain teams that he's been on with Baltimore, but to me, he is not that. Who else did he say? Breeze, I put in there. Ryan, I would put in there because he has been great, and now he ascended into really that top tier for the first time after last year's MVP performance. He had Roethlisberger, I would put him there. Derek Carr, I'm very close to putting there. I would remove Manning from his list. I would remove Newton. I would remove Flacco. And I would remove Stafford from that list. To me, there aren't 10 elite quarterbacks in the National Football League. It's just not 10 deep. It just didn't. Cam in Toledo. Hey, Cam, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. What do you think about what they gave Matthew Stafford?
I think that kind of money is absolutely ridiculous. And I have to agree with you. You know, I don't think he's a top I don't think he's an elite quarterback. I mean, they haven't really done anything. I mean, you know, they had a couple good seasons with him and Calvin Johnson, but after that, it's like, what, you know.
He has put up, there's no doubt about this, he has put up some tremendous numbers. He has had some really, really good individual seasons on a team that didn't give him a whole heck of a lot of support from the standpoint of a running game. And maybe even the standpoint of a defense, which perhaps is why his record is so bad. I am willing to give him the benefit of the doubt in all of those things. But at the end of the day, as I said earlier on, a guy who makes the people around him better are guys that I think are quote-unquote elites. The handful of guys that I mentioned are elite quarterbacks. I don't think Matthew makes everybody around him better, and I think that's
the differences. And I have to kind of go on a sidetrack here. I do agree with you, though. I don't think there are 10 elite quarterbacks. You know, Cam, the people you named, Cam Newton, I honestly think the NFL's figured him out. I mean, he's similar to Colin Kaepernick in the sense that he's an excellent dual threat quarterback. But the problem is that when you're a dual threat quarterback, you have to evolve past the read option. You know, after a while, you know, your tendencies start to show themselves. The defensive teams are smarter than that. You know, it isn't like college where you can run 4 years.
I don't disagree with you in theory, although I would say that it's not the same in that he runs a read option. I don't think they do that. He just runs. You know, it's just part of his DNA. When he drops back, I don't think they run a pass, run, read option, read the play and run. He just gets out and is quick to run because he's such a freakish athlete, talking about Cam. That's why he takes a lot more hits than a lot of other quarterbacks do. But it's not really a read option type of thing, although it kind of maybe ends
up. Yeah, I mean, I was probably wrong on that, but it's one of those things where, you know, people like those kind of quarterbacks, dual threat quarterbacks, get figured out. You know, that's a big reason why Russell Wilson hasn't been as productive as he, you know, has been in the past few years, is because he hasn't quite evolved his game yet, you know.
Yep.
The defense is starting to get figured out. You know, these dual threat quarterbacks are excellent athletes. But the problem is with a guy like, you know, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, is they've constantly found ways to stay almost an enigma to the defense. You know, they're still coming up with ways to...
They and their coordinators have found ways to change so that nobody can get a read. That's a great word you just used. They're enigmas to defensive coordinators. And with that, Cam, I got to run, brother. I'm past 4 o'clock, which means I got to tell you about your fantasy football league draft. If you haven't had it yet, I've got it lined up for you. Get to Buffalo Wild Wings. You are going to love having your draft at Buffalo Wild Wings. You get instant league credibility when you book your draft party at B-Dubs because they'll give you a free draft kit. They're going to give you a special draft feast of boneless wings, 3 sides, and 3 shareables at a special discounted draft party price to feed your entire league. So go on out to B-Dubs. Start your fantasy season right at participating locations while supplies last. And don't forget also, you don't have to be at a draft to go to B-Dubs. Go there for lunch. The B-Dubs Fast Break Lunch Menu gets you all the highlights of the main menu at discounted prices every Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. That's Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports. We got a lot more to do. We're going to get into college football. Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, will join us to talk about the season opener on Thursday with the Indiana Hoosiers at Indiana. Strange start to the season in conference for the Buckeyes. Paul Keels will join us coming up. Then we're going to talk a little bit more about Matthew Stafford's deal with Jeremy Reisman of PrideOfDetroit.com. That'll be at about 4:35 as well. So hour number two, even better than hour number one. And hour number one freaking rocked. Stay right here on the Ticket.
This isn't about, you know, trying to split hairs to try and figure out, well, is he really worth the $27 million average and $92 million guaranteed? That shifts into a market dynamic type of discussion. But Matthew, without a doubt, the best way I can put it is this. If you put him on the street and let him be a free agent, there will be people falling all over themselves trying to sign him, and they pay him a lot more than what he just got paid. Look, I understand that with great power, great pay comes a lot of responsibility, a lot of scrutiny. But we have fallen into this trap of being so lazy with attaching win-loss records to quarterbacks and using it to justify taking shots at contracts like this for a guy who admittedly his football team has not been very good against winning teams and has not been very good in the postseason when they've happened to get there. But football is the ultimate team game. If you put Matthew Stafford on the street and he had made it to become a free agent, then they should fire everybody up in Detroit. You can't let a guy like this go. We know where the market's going for quarterbacks. It's going to go even higher.
And I'm not questioning the talent of Matthew Stafford. Like Riddick said, on open market, he'd have got the money. I don't have a problem with it from that perspective. I have a problem with the fact that the man has been a quarterback in the National Football League for 8 years. He's made the playoffs 3 times. He's only had a winning record and a winning season 3 times. And this organization has not won a playoff game since 1991. There is just something about me that has a problem with individuals that end up cashing in when the team never seems to. It's not his fault, and I get that. But when you are the $27 million man, damn, could you win a playoff game? When you're making that kind of money, figure it out.
Listen, the highest guarantee that we have ever seen in NFL history was Andrew Luck getting $87 million in guaranteed money. Matthew Stafford's guarantee is north of there. When you're talking about a $135 million contract and you're talking about north of $90 million in guaranteed money, you're talking about a big-time deal here that sets the record and will become the new benchmark for other quarterbacks to shoot for when they're doing new deals.
You just don't want to go out like that. I feel like there was still a lot for me to prove, not necessarily to anybody else, but prove myself, keep on Hanson, keep on getting better. And then the way we lost just, you know, didn't sit well for, I think, any of us. For us as offense, just attacking the field, trying to create stress for a defense, I think that's something that we focused on in this offseason. I think we've been doing that pretty well in the preseason as well. For me, it just gets me in a rhythm, honestly, playing fast, just getting completions, having the ball come out on time, I think just gets me in a little rhythm, and then just keeping that consistently throughout the game.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two rolling on. It is 11 after 4. Thanks for being with us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader, and we are diving headlong into college football season. Great preview yesterday, by the way, Jim Christian with the head coach at Bowling Green. And now it's time to talk with the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. Buckeyes start the season, strangely enough, in the Big Ten. Wait, what? Yeah, Thursday they're at Indiana to take on the Hoosiers. 41 years, if my information is correct, since the Buckeyes opened the season against a Big Ten opponent. And Paul Keels is going to be calling all the action, as he does each and every year on the Ohio State Radio Network, and that includes ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Paul, how are you, my friend? Good to talk to you.
I'm good, Bob. How you doing?
I'm good, man. How do you think of the starting in conference? No warm-up games, no little, you know, chance to get your feet wet against somebody from an FBS school or even from just a different conference. What do you think about starting with the Hoosiers?
You know, I like it as something different, and I'm curious to see if the Big Ten will continue to do this, provided it's not the same teams doing it all the time. You know, this did happen somewhat semi-regularly back in the 80s. As you said, it's been since 76 since Ohio State's done it. Indiana's done it a lot, but it's been, I think, since the mid-80s that they did it. You know, we've seen in recent years the SEC doing it. So I kind of like it for something different. Not terribly crazy about the Thursday night, but it's been 10 years since Ohio State did a Thursday night game. So if you're looking at that kind of interval, that's okay. But yet for something different and think about it this way, Bob, for the most part, the week one games usually don't have this kind of sizzle to it. So it's kind of nice to have that little additional oomph.
Totally agree. Now, what is it that you don't necessarily care for about the Thursday night? Is it a personal thing? You don't like Thursday night games, or that they won't be ready because it's a different kind of prep, or what is it you don't like about that?
Oh, no. It's purely selfish because both schools don't put out their game notes until Monday, so it squeezes things like that. And if you're going to do it, Bob, I think it's good to do it early in the year on the holiday weekend. Not a big fan of the weeknight games, although I understand why the MAC does it. It gives them so much exposure. You know, the Big Ten, I think, has toyed around with this, and we may see some of the schools do it. If memory serves correct, the last time, and Michigan State is regularly open on Fridays, I think Wisconsin has done that some. Minnesota has maybe done it some. But I think the last time we saw late in a year a weeknight game at a Big Ten, Michigan and Minnesota had to play a game on a Thursday, or maybe it was a Friday because of baseball playoffs when Minnesota was still playing in the Metrodome. But just one of those old standards that the Big Ten has always been a Saturday conference for the most part, kind of like that. But something different like this to start the year every blue moon, not a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. We're talking to Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. Buckeyes open the season Thursday, of course, against Indiana, as we're discussing. Alabama's the best team in the country. Buckeyes are the second best. That's what the AP has decided. Don't tell that to Sam Hubbard. Defensive end Sam Hubbard telling the media garbage. He didn't use the word garbage, but he said, I feel like we're the best team in the country. But as Coach Meyer says, we've got to go out there and play like it and prove it when they start keeping scores. Do you agree with Sam Hubbard, or do you agree with the way the AP decided in the preseason rankings that Alabama, who lost the championship game, is the best team in the country?
You know, I think the great thing about the ratings is it does what we do, and that's it gets people talking about it. It gets people speculating and guessing. You know, whether or not a team deserves it, I think that's up to everybody else how they feel about it. If you're a football player on a team that's looked at that way, I think you certainly have to find ways to motivate yourself to have whatever edge, whether it's, you know, what Sam Hubbard is saying or somebody else. You know, certainly there are probably people that may look on other teams that they're disrespected by not being rated any higher. But I think what the ratings do is it gets us talking about it. It gets us guessing. You know, we've talked before, Bob, about, you know, the BCS, the way they, or not the BCS, I'm sorry, the playoff poll you know, how they wait, you know, a few weeks, wait a month into it. So you get a better gauge, and I think that's a good thing. But, you know, we all know the ratings are just, it's something that's driven to get people talking about it. It's beneficial to a team if you start off early to be able to keep yourself if you're undefeated or, you know, one loss or something like that, to keep yourself at the top of it. But, you know, how we look at it, how the fans look at it is probably completely different than how the players and coaches look at it.
We were talking to Paul Keels, talking about Ohio State, and they do start the season ranked number two. And just yesterday, I think it was yesterday, wasn't it, that Heisman odds were released by Vegas. Not that it really means a whole heck of a lot, but some of the big names that you would expect to be up there are up there. They include the likes of Sam Darnold. They include the likes of Lamar Jackson. And they also include the likes of JT Barrett, who seemingly a lifetime ago was going to be a Heisman finalist, probably on the stage until he injured his knee late in the season in what ended up being the Cardale Jones-led championship season. JT's a fifth-year senior. We talked about what he can bring to the table and how he's going to improve on his accuracy. That kind of seemed to be a little bit of a problem for him last year. And if he does those things, he can be a Heisman favorite. What kind of a year are you expecting?
I would agree with you completely that he could be. As far as what to expect from JT in this offense, if the offensive line can improve their production, and we saw late in the year that they didn't maybe play the way they had earlier in the year, if the receivers group and the H-back group can provide a deep downfield threat that this offense hasn't had on a consistent basis since Devin Smith has been here, if all of those things can come together and JT does improve his accuracy, improve the things that he needs to do that you would expect a fifth-year senior to do, there's a lot of reason to think that this offense could have a good year. And I think you also have to put in there the influence of Kevin Wilson as offensive coordinator. You know, we've talked about the fits that his offenses at Indiana gave Ohio State. So all of those things together, with JT Barrett being a big focal part of it and, you know, being the leader that he is, being the humble guy that he is, and also being a guy that is driven to improve himself day after day, week after week, there's a lot of reason to think that this offense could be a very successful.
Yeah, I completely agree, and a lot of it is going to be dependent upon the kind of performance that JT gets from his weapons. And we know there are so many, you know, there are myriad weapons for him to use and for him to call on. Let's start with the returning running back, Mike Weber. As I understand it, he's got a bit of a hamstring going into Thursday night. Is he going to be able to go? And if not, I mean, you know, we talked about this last time. We spoke about 3 weeks ago, I think, as the Buckeyes were in camp and getting ready. We talked about the true freshman, Dobbins, perhaps passing up the likes of DeMario McCall and some others to maybe be the number two guy behind Weber. Who's going to carry the ball the most on Thursday night?
Well, Weber did have a hamstring, and he seemingly had gotten better with it. Then apparently a couple of days ago tweaked it again just a little bit. And it sounds like a lot of holding him out or backing him down has been precautionary. But certainly Mike Weber's a guy that, you know, gave him a great year last year, is motivated to do the same and even finish stronger. But J.K. Dobbins has really taken advantage of the opportunity presented himself. This is a young man that missed pretty much all of his senior year, but a guy that, you know, in his 3 years of high school football in Texas, rushed for over 5,000 yards and over 70 touchdowns. So he's a guy that seemingly could come in and be one to carry it an awful lot. DeMario McCall's a guy that I think you're going to see both at running back and at the H-back position, possibly to catch some passes, possibly to be used as a punt returner or a kick returner. So he figures to be in there. Antonio Williams is a guy who's been around that could do some things. And Paris Campbell's going to get the first crack at H-back. Now, whether that means he's going to get a hand of the ball, whether it's going to be more of a throwing opportunity, who knows. But, you know, I think what we're seeing from receivers, H-back, and those guys we've talked about at tailback, a number of people who will get opportunities.
Yeah, and that, of course, is such a great benefit for the Buckeyes. And that's what, of course, Urban Meyer. You know, it's funny when you have the kind of recruiting classes that he does, and Nick Saban and some, you know, very select few that continue to churn out top three or top two or even maybe the best recruiting classes year after year, you feel like you have a glut of talent at certain positions. And sometimes guys get frustrated and they want to transfer. But this is the benefit of that. How do you game plan if you're a defensive coordinator in Bloomington? How do you game plan for the likes of Dobbins or McCall or Campbell or Weber or and on down the line? Because they can come at you from so many different places, out of the backfield, in the slot, H-back positions, et cetera. I mean, it's just a very difficult thing for any defensive coordinator to plan for.
And I think that's the idea, to try and be as unpredictable as possible. And the thing I guess we're all kind of curious to see and again going to the Kevin Wilson influence, will we see more up-tempo? Will we see, you know, in recent years we've seen it mostly just in the red zone or near the red zone. Will we see it in other situations? Sometimes that can help have an effect on stressing a defense, affecting their substitutions and people being in position. So that's kind of, you know, what we're all curious to see is it a mad scientist experiment with Kevin Wilson and quarterback Ryan, quarterback's coach Ryan Day, beginning with JT Barrett and all of these different people. And, you know, last year for the most part, you knew what you were going to get with Barrett, with Curtis Samuel and Mike Weber. With all of the different people we've talked about, will that create the multiplicity that made this team so successful in 2014 and 2015?
Paul Keel's joining us talking about the Buckeyes as they get ready for the season opener on Thursday, strangely enough, at Bloomington against Indiana in a conference game for the first time in 41 years. Our friend Jim Cushland is with us as well. Paul, he's got one for you. Jimmy, go ahead.
Looking on the defensive side, one thing that jumped out at me today, Paul, was Urban Meyer was saying that Jordan Fuller, Eric Smith, they're going to split some time at safety along with Damon Webb. Give us a little update on what Urban is planning to do with this secondary.
Well, you nailed it right there with the two safety spots, Jim, and they think that Isaiah Pryor, a true freshman who will be behind Damon Webb, will be the fourth guy they'd roll in there. But, you know, Fuller and Eric Smith are guys that have been on the field a little bit, not that to the lengthy extents of time that Damon Webb has, but, you know, these are guys that are going to have to pick up the mantle that Malik Hooker showed last year. And, you know, going into last year, who knew that Malik Hooker would be an All-American? So that's the opportunity there for these guys. And, you know, then you expand it and look at the cornerback positions. You've got Damon Arnett and Denzel Ward, who've never started but have played a lot. Kendall Sheffield and Jeffrey Okuda, highly regarded players coming in. So while they lose the great players out of the secondary that they had, you certainly, you know, it seems like every year we're talking about them losing two or three defensive backs to the NFL and other guys just jumping up and trying to continue that tradition and continue to play at a high level.
Paul Keel's joining us talking about the Buckeyes as they get ready for Indiana. They were picked number one in the Big Ten, were the Buckeyes. We talked nationally about the previews, but just looking in the within the conference, Michigan got a vote, I believe. Penn State got a vote or two, but the Buckeyes overwhelmingly expected to win their division and win the Big Ten. Who else should we be most concerned about, do you think? And again, it's all speculative as we get started here, but who in your mind, Paul, are you going to be watching the closest?
Well, I think we got to start with the defending champions of the conference in Penn State, especially given who they bring back at quarterback and running back with Trace McSorley and Saquon Barkley, and they've got experience coming back in their defensive secondary. So you've got to be concerned about them. You know, I think Michigan always you have to be concerned about, given the fact that, you know, they've got experience on offense. They're retooling a lot, losing a lot of people on defense. But understand that by the time Ohio State sees Michigan, they've probably answered a lot of questions they may have going into the season. And then on the other side, I think you still have to be concerned about Wisconsin, even though they've taken a couple of big hits with losing two linebackers already to season-ending injuries. Iowa is going to be an interesting one because Ohio State has to go to Iowa City, I believe, for the first time since 2010. And even though they've got to break in a new quarterback, they bring experience at their running back game and an All-American linebacker in Josie Jewell. And Nebraska will be an interesting one, too, having to play that game in Lincoln, a team that has started to really put some traction around what it is that Mike Riley wants to do. It seems as though they've got a transfer quarterback in Tanner Lee that's going to grab a hold of things there. So I think those are some of the people to keep an eye on. And even though Ohio State doesn't play them, everybody still likes to talk about how Northwestern could be a dark horse in the West. And you know, things play well, then, you know, that's a team that might end up getting the other half of the invite to Indianapolis.
By the way, I mentioned a couple of votes. The Big Ten media survey has Ohio State with 34 votes. Then you have Penn State with 7, and then Michigan 1. So I just wanted people to know what I meant when I said you got a vote or two there. But overwhelmingly, it is Ohio State. Good stuff on some of the other opponents. Let me get one or two more guys that I want to spotlight on you before you go, Paul, and just kind of get your preseason take on. Nick Bosa has been, shockingly, compared to his brother, really probably since they were 10 and 9 or whatever age they were. But right now, I mean, we're actually seeing reports that in camp, as he gets ready for his second season, Nick Bosa does indeed show some flashes of what made Joey an All-American.
Well, and I think we're all kind of anxious to see that. With practice closed, it's hard to get any kind of a handle until we start seeing games played. But, you know, they tried to be very careful with him, Bob, last year, coming back from the knee injury he had as a senior in high school. But also remember, too, that defensive line, which I think we can all probably agree is the strength of this football team, there's so many people, and, you know, the reps have to be split out. But when you're talking about Emily Nick Bosa, Sam Hubbard, Tracy Sprinkle back from a season-ending injury, Davon Hamilton, Draymond Jones.
By the way, if I may, how does Sprinkle look? Because he had a very, very bad injury. And that was, what, in the first game last year, wasn't it?
It was the first game. And, again, practice is closed, so I can't tell you how he looks. Okay. But what we hear, he's, I mean, his rehab and what he's done has prompted him to be picked to be a captain, and he'll be a starter. So, you know, all accounts sound good. Draymond Jones, from what we hear, has just really, really improved himself at one of the defensive tackle spots. Robert Landers, who was a big surprise as a true freshman last year and was very disruptive. And then you've got at the other end, Tyquan Lewis and Jalen Holmes. And there's even a young man by the name of Chase Young, a true freshman that they want to get some reps for. So, you know, that defensive line, I think there's some flexibility at who could play at what position. We'll probably see them do, you know, a couple of years ago they came up with what they called their rush man package, where they'll put four defensive ends all on the line at a certain time to go after the quarterback. So, you know, I think that certainly is a group that, has the ability, with Nick Bosa being part of it, since you asked about him, to be a very, very disruptive group.
Yeah, he's got that that famous last name, so he's going to draw a lot of attention, even though maybe some other guys deserve it just as much. And the last thing will be a strange question, Paul, because it's about a backup, and now it's a backup who's out. And, of course, I'm talking about Joe Burrow. He's a guy that I've been really, really looking forward to see throw the ball for the Buckeyes. Obviously, JT back for his, you know, fifth-year senior season. He wasn't going to do it very much, we wouldn't expect, but he was supposed to be number two, perhaps, and taking over for JT. But now he's out indefinitely with that broken bone in his throwing hand, and this really opens up the window here for Dwayne Haskins Jr. to take advantage and maybe be the heir apparent to the starting job after JT is done.
Well, by losing Joe Burrow, you lose the only other quarterback who had played in a game that they have. The estimation is it's going to be about a month before he can come back and do something. But Dwayne Haskins looked good in the spring. He had a good spring game. You know, he's a guy that people have talked about that has the dimension to be a pure prototype, pro type of passer. You know, and then after that, you're looking at the true freshman, Tate Martell, who probably in a perfect world would be redshirted. But then again, you don't know what's going to happen. So it's unfortunate that Joe suffered the injury. You know, he's already been redshirted, so, you know, they have to look at trying to get him healed as well as he can to be back into the picture. But, you know, as you said, Bob, hopefully everything goes well. JT plays in the most important downs, and if things are comfortable, then guys like Haskins can get their reps and kind of break their maiden and see what it's like to get into a real game.
Absolutely right, Paul. Paul Keels joining us, breaking it down. Really, we go from starters, offense, defense, opponents in the Big Ten, to backups even. We got you covered pretty much 6 ways from Sunday, although they're not playing on Sunday or Saturday. They're playing Thursday. Buckeyes, Hoosiers, on a Thursday night to start the season in the Big Ten, believe it or not. That's the way it's going to be. Paul Keels will have the call on the Buckeyes Radio Network, and, of course, we'll have it right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Paul, we're looking forward to talking with you each and every week. I know our normal time will be on Thursdays to get ready for Saturday games, which they the rest of them will be. But we really appreciate you kicking it off on a Tuesday with us so we get you set for the season opener. Thank you so much for the time.
My pleasure. Talk to you next week, Bob.
All right, you got it. Have a good one. There you go, Paul Keels, talking Buckeyes with us, talking Big Ten. And, you know, Sam Hubbard's an interesting dude. He said, I think we ought to be number one. But then again, we do have to prove it. And he's exactly right. They haven't started keeping score yet. But if you look at the guys back and you look at the senior leadership, you look at the number of weapons, you look at JT Barrett's experience, yeah, you could make a case. You could make a case that the Buckeyes deserve the number one preseason spot as well as Alabama does. And then again, Kush, that's exactly why I hate preseason polls in the first place, because you just don't know.
Yep.
And if it is used in any way, shape, or form, how they started to where they are when the first playoff rankings come out, then I've got a major problem with it. If the polls are part of what the committee, you know, uses to decide when they get there, I would prefer they don't put out the first ranking until at least week four. And I think what I've said in the past is, you know, how about October 1st, the first Monday, or the Monday after the first game in October? Because that gives everybody 3 or 4 games to really know what you are. If you're playing a non-conference cupcake schedule, then you can get at least one game in conference. Or if you're challenging yourself, the way Michigan and Florida are, the way Alabama and Florida State are, and so on and so forth. You know, let's get a real look at who they are and what they are for 3-4 games. Give me the Monday after the first October game, whatever date that is, and I don't have it in front of me right now.
Actually, calendar. Looking at the calendar, to me, yeah. I would put that at Monday, October 2nd, because, you know, with this week being kind of week one, Saturday, September 30th is basically week five.
Yeah, there you go. And so that would be the best way to do it if you really wanted to get a true look at who the best teams are from a poll perspective. After you see them play three, four, maybe in some cases five games, depending on when you start, I guess. But probably everybody has four games. That's how you get a real, true, accurate assessment of who the best teams are. But, Kush, you know, and I know, it'll never happen that way. And why? Because there's money to be made in August by putting these polls out.
Yep.
And putting ads on web pages and putting ads on TV. AP Top 25, ESPN selling the thing. You know, CBS, all of them doing that. They sell these reports each and every week, and that's why they will continue to do it, even though it makes no sense whatsoever. Because how many times do we need to see preseason top 10 teams end up, you know, at the end of December out of the top 25?
And how many there's times always do we at least teams, one or two. Always.
And how many times do we see teams out of the top 25 who end up being top 10, you know, at the start of the season, according to the quote-unquote experts and what we expect they will be like?
And again, that's
and then they end up in the top 10.
And again, just like the previous answer I said a second ago, it's usually about one or two per season.
Yep. And that just proves that it's just all so much, you know, it's salesmanship. It is. It's advertising. It's marketing. And they're just pushing college football for what it is, which is a great big for-profit venture. Okay. Hey, before we take this time out here at the bottom of the hour, Kush, and we get ready to talk more NFL and Matthew Stafford making more money than anybody in the history of the National Football League, I want to remind people about a different kind of use for money. The devastation in South Texas and what's coming to Louisiana in the form of torrential biblical proportion rain, 800-year storm, that's what they're calling it, which has just essentially put the city of Houston underwater. Today, by the way, a police officer lost his life in the water. He drowned in the overflowing bayou. It is just simply unimaginable what they're suffering right now down there in Houston. So here's what we've got. We're coming together to help our neighbors by using the Red Cross. Text the word Harvey to 90999. Text the word Harvey to 90999. That'll take you to the Red Cross, and it will allow you to donate $10. That's it, 10 bucks. I don't care what you do. You can go have a meal at McDonald's. Give up one meal for 10 bucks. Give up a burrito. Give up whatever it is you're going to do for 10 bucks. And the $10 from you and from me and from everybody else will add up and mean millions to the people that need our help. Down there along the Gulf Coast of Texas. Please text Harvey to 90999 to help today. All right, get about it at the Hour Sports Center. We'll come back and talk a little bit more pro football. Stafford got paid. Did they pay too much? Does a second-tier quarterback deserve top-tier dollars? That's what I believe is the problem here, even though I can't blame the Lions for falling into the trap. We'll talk about that with Jeremy Reisman of PrideOfDetroit.com coming up right here on The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed. As we continue the extravaganza, it's 4:40 now. Yeah, there's a reason you're hearing this. Floyd Mayweather is jealous of Matthew Stafford right now. Matthew officially part of TMT, the money team. Oh, yeah. Grab that cash with both hands and make a stash. Matthew Stafford, now the richest player in the history of the National Football League. I want you to think about that for a moment, will you please? Think of the legends. Think of Ditka, Butkus, Sayers, Brown, Rice, Montana, Bradshaw, Brady. None of them ever made as much money as Matthew Bleeping Stafford. Matthew, who's never won a playoff game. All right. Matthew Stafford, who has got a terrible record against winning teams, but he is still the best thing that the Lions have going. And that, my friends, is the conundrum about the signing of the extension of Matthew Stafford to the richest deal in NFL history. Joining us now to make fun of it, I mean analyze it, is Jeremy Reisman, who writes about the Lions for PrideOfDetroit.com. That is a part of SB Nation. Jeremy, good to have you back, my man. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Everybody is talking about Matthew's money, and it's just such a bizarre thing. You know what, Jeremy? Because the Lions have no choice here. They have absolutely no choice here. Is Matthew Stafford worth the richest contract in NFL history? Absolutely not. But we all know that if Matthew Stafford didn't get the richest contract in NFL history from Detroit, he would have gotten it somewhere else. So that being the case, they really had no choice here, correct?
Absolutely. You're 100% right there. If the Lions were to offer him a deal that, you know, if you say Matthew Stafford's the eighth best quarterback right now in the league, if you were to offer him the eighth best money right now, he would laugh in your face.
Exactly.
And
his agent would do more than laugh. His agent,
right. He would not be in contact with you for several months.
Agreed, yeah, and it might poison every relationship you ever had with him on every other player. And this is the way the league is built, and I completely understand that. How do you, if you were just kind of looking at it, let's take money out of the equation. And I had a conversation with a couple of listeners about this before, and if you were just to identify the guys that you would call the elite, and I mean the elite quarterbacks in the National Football League, I don't think there are 10 of them. I think that number probably cuts off at around 7 or 8, and I don't count Matthew Stafford among them. I think he's right there at the top of the second tier that includes some very, very talented quarterbacks. He's right there with them, but I don't think he's one of the elite quarterbacks, and thus, if you then did put money into the equation, worth being in that line. Everybody says, Jeremy, that, well, it's Matthew, he's the richest now because he was the next guy whose contract was up. And, you know, pretty soon somebody else's contract who's in that elite category is going to be up, and he'll make more than Stafford. But I don't put Stafford in that line because I don't put him in that first elite tier of less than 10 quarterbacks. Where do you put him?
Well, I think I'm actually a little more strict than you. I would say I only have about 4 or 5 quarterbacks in the top tier, and I don't have Matthew Stafford among them. But I would say anyone who falls in the first two tiers is probably worthy of getting that, you know, monster deal, the best deal at the time.
How deep is your second tier then? If you have 4 or 5 in the first, how deep is 2?
I would say probably like about 12. And I have Matthew right around your 9th best in the league right now. And so, I mean, even having a top third quarterback in the league is rare. You look at the guys that we're talking about, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger, Drew Brees, Matt Ryan. These are guys that have been around for a really long time, and they're not guys that tend to change teams very often, with the exception of maybe Drew Brees, but that was a whole different situation.
Yeah,
well, these are guys that have been around the league for a really long time, and they're not going to be leaving their teams anytime soon because they know they've got something rare.
You're right about that. And this is a quarterback-starved league. For God's sake, look at Jacksonville. Look at the New York Jets. Look at the 49ers, who got a career preseason game out of Brian Hoyer a couple of days ago, and they're all flying high. But wait and see how that turns out. Look at the Chicago Bears. For now, we'll see what happens with Glennon and Trubisky and so on. But there are so many teams that are just desperate for what you might call a franchise quarterback. And is Matthew Stafford a franchise quarterback? Absolutely. Do you have to be one of the top-tier guys to be called a franchise quarterback? Absolutely not. But here's where I would take issue, Jeremy. You know, when you say even if you have one of the top third guys, well, when you're talking about the top third of guys, you're talking about 11. I don't think that guys down at 11 or 10 or 9 or maybe even 8 deserve to be in that, hey, when your contract is up, you get to set the new market. I think the new market should only be set by the very top-tier guys. The second-tier market should be set by the second-tier guys. And if you have, as I do, Matthew Stafford in that mix with Russell Wilson, with, I don't know, Joe Flacco, whoever it is you put in that group, then when their time comes up, you can make more than everybody else in that tier, but you ain't making more than Aaron Rodgers. You ain't making more than Tom Brady. You ain't making more than Roethlisberger. You ain't making more than Brees, which are kind of the guys I think. And maybe Luck. Andrew Luck is just in such a horrible situation there in Indy as he just runs for his life, and he still puts up tremendous production. But the very elite of the elite should kind of set their own market prices, and the next group you ought to set theirs. Yes.
I mean, there's a point to be had there, but one thing that I just noticed is all the guys that you mentioned in that top tier, they're also all significantly older than Matthew Stafford, and I think that has to play a big part into this too. Matthew Stafford's 29 years old. This is arguably the twilight of his career, so he has every right to grab every dollar that he has because this is probably the best five-year stretch he's going to have in his career, in my opinion.
This is his prime, yeah. This is his prime right now. He's in the middle of his prime. Probably started at most people, I don't know. I see most primes as being around 27 to 32, 33, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Right. So I think age is a big factor here. You know, he should be getting more than Phillip Rivers and Tom Brady and, well, maybe not Tom Brady at this moment, but I would say if Tom Brady were to sign the deal right now, he wouldn't get as much. Well, he wouldn't get a five-year deal for 135, I don't think. Same with Drew Brees. I mean, these guys are kind of reaching the end of their careers. Well, Matthew Stafford, your hope, not only is going to have these next 5 years or next 6 years in Detroit, but potentially another contract even after that.
Jeremy, do you think that Bob Quinn ever brought up in the negotiations that record against teams with winning records, Matthew Stafford's, and his record in the playoffs and three appearances with no victories? In order to keep that number under $30 million a year, do you think this was something that meant something to the front office?
If he did bring that up, it was only a negotiation tool. I don't think that's something that really bothers Bob Quinn. He said today that negotiations were just about the most cordial negotiations he's ever had. So if he were to throw something out like that, it seems like a little mean-spirited to me, especially since I'm not a big fan of using quarterback records as a measure of worth. You consider that Matthew Stafford brought this team from 0-16. Of course they're going to have really bad records against bad or good teams early on. But you just consider how much better this team has been recently. You know, made the playoffs in two of the past 3 years. They still haven't taken that step to really take on the club's elite, but we're talking about a team that also had the worst defense in the league last year, hasn't had a running game. It's a team game, and so I don't think Bob Quinn really values quarterback wins as a statistic, but it could have been a negotiating tool if he needed it.
I don't think it would be the measuring stick that Bob Quinn would use and say, you know, he's just not getting that much because of this. But to me, it's got to be a factor. It's got to be in the equation. You know, as you talk about the passing yards and as you talk about the touchdowns and as you talk about three playoff appearances in 8 years, you also have to say, yeah, well, have we made progress to where we want to be, which is being one of the best teams in the league under his leadership? It's a quarterback league. Quarterback is the coach on the field and on down the line, the driving force, the driving factor, et cetera. And against the best teams in the league, he's 5-46. Did a lot of that come after 0-16? Yes. How? And I literally don't know the answer to this. Do you? What is his record against winning teams, let's say, in the last 3 years? Can't be great because it's only five total in 8 years, five victories total. But is that progress being made in the last three as we get further and further away from what was 0-16?
It's not a lot. I don't have the statistics right in front of me. I mean, all you have to do is really think back to last year where they kind of collapsed down the stretch against that good string of teams.
Correct, yes.
You can blame it being on the good teams. You can blame it on Matthew Stafford's finger. A lot of factors that played in there. But to me, it still all boils down to this roster is not that good right now. And the fact that Matthew Stafford dragged that team to a 9-7 record and a wild card berth is really, really impressive to me. And I think it has to be put into that sort of context, anything with win-loss record. I mean, you look at a guy like Matt Ryan, who was 1-4 in the playoffs before last year. He was something like 20-33 in the past 3 years leading up to 2016. And then he puts on an MVP performance, should have won a Super Bowl. It's that quick of a turnaround that can happen when you build a team around a good quarterback like that. Obviously, it's still on Matthew Stafford to take this team to the next level, but I think he's put them in a spot where as long as they can, you know, build around him, get a defense that's manageable, maybe a running game that's below average instead of bottom of the league, I think Matthew Stafford can bring this team a championship if he has the right tools around him.
I don't disagree about the tool part, obviously. I mean, goodness gracious. They were talking this morning on Mike and Mike, which we have right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. I'll throw a little trivia at you. Do you know the last time the Lions had a 100-yard rusher in a game?
I remember it was Reggie Bush. I don't remember the exact day or year.
It was all the way back in 2013. I don't remember the date either, but I know it was from 2013, which means 2014, 2015, and 2016 have all come and gone. That's 48 games. since they have had.
Yeah.
Even if it was at the end of 2013, so it could be well over 50 games since they've had a 100-yard rusher. So certainly, you know, for Matthew Stafford to succeed without a balanced offense, and now, you know, and there's context to all of this, right, Jeremy? I mean, because there's a lot of teams that don't have 100-yard rushers because this is not the same kind of balanced offense league that it used to be. It is about throwing 40, 45 times a game for most teams. Matthew Stafford's passing attempts are always among the highest in the league, and maybe that's by design. More than, you know, or maybe it's a combination of there isn't a great running game or running back, so therefore they have to, or I should say, they really like to throw more because it's the kind of offense that Matthew Stafford thrives in, so they don't really have a need for as much of a running game. But either way, you know, those kinds of things haven't been there for Matthew Stafford, and that has to be considered in these types of negotiations as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm trying to think of examples of quarterbacks who've gone under worse conditions and come out better, and the only ones I can really think of is Peyton Manning, you know, when the Indianapolis Colts had a pretty poor running game and no defense. And really, the only other example I can think of is Aaron Rodgers, because I don't really think the Packers have fielded that great of a team over the past 2-3 years, but he's managed to win the division just about every year there. So, I mean, that's the bar that's ahead of Matthew Stafford, that I think it's pretty clear from everyone. He's not there yet. He's not at that tier. But I think he's only, you know, a half step, maybe a full step below that.
Maybe so. Let me ask you this. Who's the next guy to break Stafford, break his record here? Is it Kirk Cousins? And if it is, I'm going to have the same conversation that we're having right now about Kirk Cousins. He's next in a line that perhaps he shouldn't be in. He's not one of the elite quarterbacks. Is he productive? Yes. Is that production going to give him, you know, an opportunity to make $30 million a year from a team like Jacksonville or somebody else, depending on what they're able to draft? Yes. But he shouldn't be in that line. Is it Cousins? And where do you think this thing ends? Are we going to see a cap put on this nonsense once we get from one quarterback outdoing the last deal that the last quote-unquote franchise quarterback gets? Or are we going to start getting into NBA dollars where it's just, we're out, you know, and it's a little bit tougher because of the different types of caps and the systems they have, but where it's just really out of whack?
Yeah, it's hard to say where the future is going, but I definitely think Kirk Cousins is the next guy in line. You know, the Washington just kind of ran out of opportunities, and now they're at a position where Kirk Cousins is ready to face free agency next year, and that means he has all the leverage. So that means I think he gets a significantly bigger deal than Stafford got, because if Washington doesn't agree, then suddenly he's on the free agent market and there's 10, 15 teams vying for his attention, and that's going to drive the price up a lot. As far as where does this end,
yeah,
it's hard to say.
We get to 35, 40 million
dollars
a year? Because, you know, I think the next deal is probably going to pass 30. Matthew Stafford's deal is about 2 million more than per year average than what Derek Carr just signed for?
Yeah, so, 27 to 25.
Okay, so if somebody else gets it up over 30 like a Cousins, at what point is it 32? At what point? I mean, we're really talking, you know, within the next 5 years, I guess, if all things are equal, until, at least until we get to 2021 and the new collective bargaining agreement is struck or is negotiated or is not done and there's a work stoppage of some sort. Barring that, I mean, just the trend the way that it is, I mean, I think we're going to start to get a little bit out of control.
It's possible. I mean, one factor to think about, though, is the salary cap just keeps rising exponentially every year. You actually look at the percentage of the salary cap that Matthew Stafford's deal takes up this year, and it's not even, that's the one thing that Matthew Stafford's record-breaking deal didn't break, because Joe Flacco's deal a few years ago, his was something like 16% of the team's salary cap, and I believe Matthew Stafford's doesn't break further than like 15.5%. So I imagine those numbers are going to stay pretty steady for that top tier, top two tiers of quarterbacks. It'll be around 15% of the salary cap, and there's also, I believe, a TV deal with the NFL that's coming up for renegotiation that could increase the cap even more. So I see these numbers just continuing to skyrocket until the salary cap itself starts to die down in its growth. But at this point, you know, this could be, you know, we're talking 35, 40 years in maybe 5 years, 40 million in 5 years, 6 years or so.
Jeremy Reisman joining us talking about Matthew Stafford's big deal. It's locked off. The deal is done. We all knew it was going to be done. The question was how much. perhaps we should be celebrating that it wasn't over $30 million right now, so that there will be a little more time before that percentage goes up and we get up into the crazy 35 or close to $40 million per year numbers for NFL quarterbacks. Jeremy, great work at PrideOfDetroit.com, my friend. Thanks for visiting with us.
Appreciate you having me.
You got it. We'll talk again soon as we get close to the NFL regular season. That's going to do it. Thanks again to Paul Keels for talking Buckeyes with us. They start off against the Hoosiers on Thursday. Thanks to Jeremy and thanks to you for listening and being part of a great conversation. Tomorrow's show is going to be better than this one, and that's good news for you because this one rocked. We'll see you tomorrow right here on The Ticket.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.